Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Everything PC podcast, episode 6 of season 1. And I'm, of course, joined again by my collaborator in this venture, and that's Gerard Pretorius. Hi, Gerard. How's it going, man?
Going well.
Going well. Good stuff. So I've been looking forward to this episode for a while, actually, because I've been spending quite a bit of money over the last year on Apple equipment. I've been taken in by the Apple Silicon story and the M1 processor, and we've actually got three Macs in the office here now, and we use them as our daily drivers. Not for gaming, it must be said. This is for office work, and they work really, really well. We use them mainly for, as you'd imagine, in a tech publication, online publication, we use them for web word processing, things like Evernote, which only recently, funnily enough, became available for Apple Silicon. And of course, the Adobe Creative Cloud, Photoshop, Premiere Pro, After Effects, etc., where this Silicon really shines when you're doing exports, when you're rendering video in Premiere Pro, for example. The performance is actually staggering. Given that we're actually doing it on Mac Minis, which are these very basic entry-level machines that you can pick up for about, I think they start at about 14,000 Rand. And even their base models run the Adobe Suite very, very well indeed. So it's impressive stuff. It feels to me like Apple's onto something very significant here. But of course, there are two sides to every story, and we're going to unpack that in today's episode.
Yes.
Of course, it goes without saying, if you've missed any of the previous episodes, do go check them out. We've covered a lot of ground already. Probably have about eight hours of programming in the bag, so to speak, and we've covered Intel and AMD, and in our last episode, episode 5, we had a look at NVIDIA. So this is going to be the final episode of season 1. But we do plan to come back for a season 2 a little bit later this winter to tackle other issues. But certainly in this season, we've been tackling everything to do with semiconductors and silicon and everything that's happening in that space. And it's fascinating at the moment. And if you missed our discussion last week, the next 5 years are going to be amazing, amazing. If you've gotten a little bit bored about bored with the PC industry and have thought, actually quite correctly, that it perhaps hasn't been advancing as fast as it used to. It hasn't been, but that's all about to change. So go listen to those previous episodes, and you'll find out all about that. But Apple, very interesting company. They've always been a bit outside the mainstream, although they are the biggest company in the world today by market cap.
Yes.
That's largely due to the iPhone, much more so than their prowess in the PC market. But for years they've been using Intel processors, and they've had the diehard faithful who've continued to use them. But they haven't distinguished themselves particularly that much from the PC space, with the obvious exception that they're running a different operating system to the rest of the world.
Yes.
Mac OS versus either Windows or Linux. I had a look back. There's so much history under the bridge here in terms of all the things that Apple has done over the years, that it's, and how many computers they've manufactured over the years, that it's almost impossible to go back and look at it all. But looking back at the Macintosh, which has of course been their main computer line since the mid 1980s, they've had three main chip suppliers in that time. They've of course started with Motorola with the 68000 series. Back in way back when, 1980 FUTSAC.
Early 80s.
Back when there were still dinosaurs roaming the earth. And they then progressed to the PowerPC architecture, which I think was also from Motorola, or it was a joint venture. I forget the details now.
PowerPC, that's IBM.
Was it IBM? With Motorola's involvement. It's so long ago now, I forget the details, but it didn't work out for them very well. They got into a lot of trouble.
X86 kind of just won the battle eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
Steve Jobs came back and threw out
PC. That transition period where Apple was in a massive slump, and then
They were going to go bankrupt. There was the famous Wired magazine cover. I don't know if you remember it, with the Apple logo on the cover and barbed wire around the Apple logo and drops of blood coming out of the logo. And it just said, it just had one word at the bottom of the cover of that Wired magazine, and it said, "Pray."
Okay.
Of course, the Wired magazine guys, big fans of Apple, as you'd imagine. But back then, must have been about 96, 97. Yeah. Apple was in serious trouble. There was a very real chance that they were going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, that was the early days when Bill Gates ran Microsoft like a tight ship and basically beat everyone with a club and said, "Katong, katong, katong, out, out, out." And then,
and ironically, Bill Gates actually saved Apple.
Yes,
you'll remember the famous first keynote that Steve Jobs did on his return, and then Bill Gates appeared on a video link on the stage, and everyone in the audience booed when he appeared.
I happen to have a special guest with me today via satellite downlink, and if we could get him up on the stage right now.
And I remember Jobs had to say, "Guys, we know historically this guy's been the enemy, but he's helping us. He's bailing us out, and he's going to develop Microsoft Office for the Mac." And they desperately needed that money. And if that hadn't happened, Apple could very well have gone under. And I don't, by the way, think that Bill Gates was being altruistic in doing this. He was facing antitrust issues at the time, and he was very Microsoft concerned. Was, I think that if Apple went under, Microsoft was going to facing the very real risk of breakup.
Yes, well, it's basically monopoly. Then you're really a monopoly. Mm. You're going to really say, "Oh, Linux." I'm like, that's like how many of the market cap? It's like, so. You could see Microsoft probably did it for two reasons. First of all, Office is where the money is. Operating system doesn't make money. The software did.
Well, so, it did for Microsoft back in those days.
Yeah, well, even now, Office 365. Mm. How many people use Office 365? That's return on investment the whole time. They're making, and then government orders with Office. Office is their workhorse. That's why Windows has kind of dropped ball a bit on Windows compared to Mac. That's actually focused on the actual operating system. Whereas Windows went, okay, the operating system actually doesn't make us money. We make money in Azure and cloud and Office. So I presume he bought that, and then also kind of like, oh, okay, if these guys go under, then everyone will look at us like a massive fine comb and like,
yeah.
Then he's already in crap like that, and then he has some kind of goodwill. And it's also, it's a bit of advantage. It would be stupid if Apple failed, because then Microsoft wouldn't really need to have a competition.
Yes. The antitrust authorities back then, it was the Bill Clinton administration, and there was a lot of antitrust going on at the time, and Microsoft ended up in a big antitrust trial over Internet Explorer.
Yeah, for sure. It's not as if Bill Gates did all of that out of his kind heart. He was a kind of a prick, but smart prick.
He was very...
It was ingenious. That's the problem. That's why it was so difficult to get him. It's how he did it is so like smooth. Yeah. Everything was technically by the book, but it's like, but you're playing it really close to the line there, Gates. And like, you can't do anything to me. So there were a lot of people he upset. And again, he was a bit arrogant. So
I'd love to ask Bill Gates today, if I ran into him in an elevator or something, I'd love to ask him, "Do you regret bailing out Apple like you did in 1997 or whenever it was?" You don't think he regrets it?
Because Microsoft is still Microsoft is still so rich.
That's true.
Like Microsoft is, in terms of cash, they have more cash than Apple.
Yes.
They can literally go and buy Activision in hard cash.
Yes. $70 billion.
Exactly. Apple can't do that, as far as I know. They can probably do acquisitions.
No, Apple has that balance sheet too. I think that's $200 or $300 billion in cash.
Yeah, but I don't think it's in actual hard cash, because they also have a lot more. Apple needs to spend more money than Microsoft. Microsoft just does software. Apple needs to do hardware as well. And hardware costs are expensive. So a lot of R&D. Mm-hmm. Go ask the Microsoft Xbox team. Just developing the Xbox, that's a, like you're spending close to, probably close to $1 billion.
I'm just going to have a look at what Apple's cash position is, because it is a phenomenal amount of money. Here we go. Apple cash on hand. Well, it has come down, actually. Quarterly values. Okay, so they've obviously been, they've probably been using it for share buyback.
Yeah.
But it's still a significant amount of
money. No. They're still stupid rich, like I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. But it's the problem is you're going up against Microsoft that has old money, and Apple only, I don't know, where would you really say that Microsoft, that Apple really kicked off? Basically 2007-ish? 2010, actually?
Well, it depends on how you measure it, because, I mean, they obviously had that initial period of success under Steve Jobs in the 1980s.
Yeah.
Then he was ousted, and they brought the Pepsi guy in who took over and ran it into the ground.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there was Gil Emilio after that who didn't really do a lot either. And then the prodigal son returned in around 1997. And then they focused initially on Mac. So he brought out that bubble-shaped iMac, which was hugely popular, the ones in the different colors. It looked like a bit like a VW Beetle in some respects.
Yeah, that's their creator phase. They went specifically to creators because that's when I think Final Cut Pro came out then as well. That's what you call the software. Okay. I think
Final Cut Pro, the video editing software.
Yes, Apple's own video editing software. Mm. I think that's when they pushed that, the whole more arty type of thing and creators and video editors and so forth, which is ingenious because Apple took that market and ran with it, and Microsoft,
Microsoft was the boring office company that developed Excel.
Exactly. So that's why, again, genius to him. It's like you see a market where Microsoft isn't focusing at, and then you just go, boom, focused all your attention and money on that one section, and it worked.
But I think the big turn came when he announced the iPod, the music player.
Yes, that's probably when it started, because that's when iTunes started. That's the money basket. Yeah. iTunes is when they hit the software thing.
The iPhone was actually the iPhone was like an iteration. It was a big iteration, but it was an iteration of the iPod.
Well, that and then also a collective other people's idea. Jobs was very good at looking at other ideas and saying, I see where you're going, but you should use it like this. So again, a lot of people go, oh, he's a thief. He's stealing other people's ideas. Yes, he's just implementing it better than they did.
Yeah, which is that's how they started. I'll
give them credit to that.
Xerox graphical user interface.
With the mouse and so forth. Exactly. So he saw the potential in things that, and how it could be used in a different, in a better way that they didn't think of, which is then.
And it was like, brilliant.
And it's like, it was brilliant. That's kudos to him. Again, a lot of people have their own problems with a person, but
he wasn't a nice guy.
No, he
was. I remember when the first iPhone came out. At the time, I was using, I think, a Nokia E72. It was this device which was half keyboard. It was kind of a BlackBerry ripoff, I think, and Nokia trying to compete with BlackBerry. And that's really where the focus was. It was in creating these. I think it was running Symbian, if I'm not mistaken. Windows was in the market with Compaq, and they had the iPad.
Yeah, they had all the devices. Like, PDAs and so forth, and PDAs. All the small PCs HP and so forth. One. HP, Dell, there was so many Japanese companies. Geez, you can't even name them. There's so many Japanese companies that made them. And I think it was the actual, I think in South Africa, they were named Leaf. They were one of the first like touch phone things that you could
buy. The Mate.
Yeah, I think it was.
Leaf was the distributor.
Yes, that's what I'm like.
Leaf Wireless.
Yes, I think that was the first like terrible operating system. Thing would die and crash like every freaking now and then. Like you just Windows. Did something wrong and blue screen. Oh, well, it's not even blue screen. It just died because that's the early days of ARM and software. And then Windows, Apple came out and with the iPhone and hey, this thing actually works for like 40 minutes straight without crashing. Oh, it's reliable. So
I remember the first iPhone. It was, in fact, no, we didn't get the first iPhone in South Africa. They never brought it in. I think the first one we got in South Africa was the iPhone 3G.
Yes.
Which is the second one. And, I had one of those for a while. And I remember the thing, it was, the battery wouldn't last 6 hours. It was as slow as hell, but it was still amazing. Because it was this touchscreen device with these beautiful icons, and you could see where this was going.
It depends, because some people get spoiled with what we now know as speed and what we knew then of speed. Because back then, we still very used to hard drives.
Yes.
So everything was a bit slower. Now, again, the operating systems were smaller and more agile and so forth versus now. But a lot of people get spoiled with what they have now. So it's difficult for people to sometimes remember how bad it actually was.
It was terrible.
Because it's like, and that's how it was. It's like, you had to wait for Windows to boot up your Windows XP. That took a couple of times for your little hard drive to spin and get it up and running and so forth. So
the bad old days.
Yeah, well, it's, you have to have bad days to have good days. So
yeah, know where you come from. Yeah, I remember sitting there waiting a minute for Windows XP to boot. And then you type in your password and wait another 30 seconds.
Yes, for all the icons to come up, and then the logo comes up, and then that iconic XP logo and XP freaking background.
And then you had to dial up to the internet, which took another 2 minutes.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. That's, yeah, that
was only 20 years ago.
Yes. Now, luckily, that accelerated very quickly.
Yes. That was only 20 years ago. It feels like it should have been back
in the Jurassic period. That's right. It's like how quickly we got used to instant on. You smash your if you've got a laptop, you open the screen and there we go, you're on, you put your password in, you're in. That's not how it normally was. And people forget that and even now from us being in a store, people coming there with their phones and so forth, it's like, oh, why is my phone faster? I'm like, well, how much do you spend on your phone? How much is your contract? Oh, like $300 a month. Okay. How much is the laptop? $6,000. I'm like, yeah, of course the phone is faster because it's $300 over 24 months. You've paid a lot more on your phone than on the PC. I would hope the phone is faster.
Yes. But it actually astonishes me how people always go cheap when they buy PCs, but when they buy a smartphone, oh, I've got to have the latest Apple, I've got to have the latest top end.
Good
Galaxy.
Marketing. It's all about marketing there. Apple has good marketing.
Oh, okay, PC, Samsung. $6,000. Too expensive. Can I get this PC for $4,000?
Oh yes, no.
And then they get some. Then they get some slow piece of crap.
Crap. Oh, Celeron. One day.
Celeron.
Hope you die a quick death. But we'll see. Hopefully.
So speaking of Intel, of course, Apple then kind of was forced in a way to adopt Intel, and it was one of the big decisions that Steve Jobs took.
I normally pay the tax. What other choice did they have? They couldn't go to AMD, really, because AMD didn't have enough manufacturing capability. TSMC, I don't even know if they actually were really around back then. So there wasn't really anyone else. It's like IBM or Intel. And Intel kind of like just took a lead pipe to IBM and say, doof, we will kill your servers now. So I think that's like there was no choice. It was Intel or no one else, because Intel was the only company that can manufacture the amount of chips that Apple required.
Yeah, yeah. And I think everyone expected Apple just to stay with Intel, but the murmuring started a few years ago that they were looking at their own chip designs, and they actually bought some technology from Intel, if I recall correctly. And then they came up with the M1 chip, which was debuted about 2 years ago now. Very cleverly marketed. It certainly got the Apple community very, very excited and energized. It got me, I haven't used a Mac in many, many years, back onto the platform and using it and enjoying it. And impressed, really impressed with the performance. So the question is Apple onto something significant here that is going to markedly change the computer landscape? Are they going to become a much more significant player in the PC arena than they have been historically?
Well, Apple has there's probably two stages of Apple. There's Apple that has Apple fan people that just buy Apple. No matter what they do, they will always buy Apple. So Apple, and especially in America, there's a lot of people that just always buy Apple. They will never ever buy anything else. Then they can break into that normal where they kind of lost the creators a bit, because the creators kind of moved away from Apple, because even on Intel systems, Apple wasn't really that great. Final Cut Pro was still very good because you could see there were some they had some working with Intel, making QuickSync working and so forth, had excellent decoding and so forth. So there was, like, you can see spots of, like, brilliance, and then they just couldn't keep up with the GPUs and the CPUs in terms of, you could buy, like, a Dell high-end XPS laptop or HP and so forth. If you, the gaming laptops just completely destroyed Apple on anything with Creator. You could game on it. You could make Adobe work better. Yep. It was smoother on the gaming laptops because you got better GPU and all that type of jazz. So it's, I think that the main thing there that probably killed Apple a bit there is because of the Apple had NVIDIA GPUs in their machines, and then there was a whole debacle with NVIDIA selling them chips that kind of got too hot, and then actually, like, literally so hot that the solder broke, and then that the actual pointing mechanism from the GPU to the motherboard broke, and then the GPU died, basically, and then you have to send the board in to get reballed and all that jazz. And that turned into a massive, massive cluster screw up. So that kind of burned that bridge. that just burned the bridge completely between Apple and NVIDIA. That's why you'll never see an Apple go even close to NVIDIA anymore. Yeah, and I think that kind of hurt them in the later stages, because NVIDIA completely dominated the creator space, like dominated. So that kind of screwed them a bit there, but they still went along and so forth. You could already see even Apple's main focus was on the phones. The phones had more innovations than the actual PCs did. And you could also see start seeing Apple pushing the operating system to do more and more and more. And then I would assume even they had the same thing. It's like, these chips on our phones are getting really good, very fast. Yes. And, like, we've got tablets now using them. Yeah. I presume at some point that, like, the high-ups, I presume the engineers just said, why couldn't we just put this in an iMac? Like, what would customers really miss if we take this chip and put an iMac? The iStore is still there. All the apps that they have on their phones will work on there because it's our ARM architecture, so it will just work on there. We already have Office there working on ARM that they've worked on their own thing, and most people use everything for web now. So you've got Chrome open. I doubt you'll be running Safari, but go for it. But you'll, everything is mostly browser-based. If you have to work into work, it's in the browser. If you have to do something, it's in the browser. If you have to edit documents, you've got Google Docs on the browser. So you don't really need a traditional program anymore. So I presume eventually they started seeing that, and then I assume what that then started to push is, like, asking Intel, okay, what is your plans, Intel? Where are you going? Like, what is the point here? What are you doing? And I think Intel just kind of, like, said, again, I think Intel was just superly accurate with it to say, okay, where else are you going to go? And, like,
when we spoke in our focus on Intel in episodes 3 and 4, I think it was, how they've ran out of, their innovation sort of slowed down, and how Intel is actually in a bit of trouble right now, and is probably going to take a few years under Pat Gelsinger, the new CEO, to get out of that. And I'm sure Apple saw that in the Intel roadmap and realized, well, do we really want to be part of Intel's problems for the next 5 years while they sort themselves out, or do we do our own silicon?
Oh, I think if it's even before that, I think Apple, again, that's why, again, I think it was, they saw what was coming. They asked Intel to do, and again, making a chip doesn't, it doesn't happen over like 2 years, 3 years. This is like a 5 year thing. So since they made that chip, I told people that's a decision they had to make probably close to 5 to even 6, 7 years that they went and said, sweet, let's get the guys that can make chips, big chips, get the R&D, let's get guys from Intel, because they did take people from Intel. Let's get guys from all over the place. Let's get, again, they had, I think, even some AMD guys went and worked for Apple then. So hire all those people. They can already see their own potential of their own chip that they're making on phones. So the question is just, can we scale it? Can we make it bigger and so forth? And again, and the obvious answer is yes, you can. There's nothing stopping an ARM chip for being as good as an x86 chip. It's just the amount of effort you put on it to make it compete in those areas. So I think Apple just kind of had the realization where, and again, if they can have their own chip, then they have better control of it, because now if you're beholden to Intel, you reliant on Intel to innovate and make stuff and make software. And I presume they just realized Intel doesn't care. And
Apple is not their, I mean, they supply, you know, 90% of their chips go into the desktop chips, go into the Windows ecosystem.
Exactly. It's not just that.
Apple's a fairly small.
Like, the problem is Apple comes in, like, becomes demandy and needy. HP doesn't come to them. Dell doesn't come to them. What other company went to Intel and saying, we're complaining about your chips? None of the other companies complain, because they all made fat money and they're all happy. But you could see, because it's a company, you don't see Dell, HP, and all these other companies making phones. So they don't have that expertise in saying, oh, where it can come. And again, for Apple, it's they're pushing the software ecosystem. The software sells the hardware, not the other way around. Apple, from Intel side, they need to make the hardware for the software. But Apple goes, okay, what software? We've got all of these software in there. How can we optimize it and so forth? So I think it is a natural evolution. Because they ended up having so much money, it was a viable option for them to say, okay, let's go spend like a good couple of hundred mil, even more than that, probably. Let's see where this can go, and then, okay, more. And the thing, I think the camel that broke them back there was when Intel started their power efficiency losses. Apple completely, in my opinion, I would lose it. It's like, what the hell? We're getting more performance, but we're using more juice. Something is not right here. Look at our phones. Our phones are every generation improving power efficiency and getting faster at either using the same amount of power and still being 20-30% faster.
Yeah.
What the hell, Apple? We want a laptop that will last a day on a battery. Why can't you give us that?
Yeah.
And then it just made it so feasible for them to go with their own designs. So they're in a unique position where they can control the software and the ecosystem and then the hardware now. And I think they realized if we can control all those facets and the amount of money they can make from their own phones, because again, if you sell your hardware device, you are linked to their operating system. You can't just load Linux on there. Well, technically you can, but we're talking about here like 0.0001% of the user base that will do that. So if you can sell them the hardware then forces them to use their own proprietary operating system that requires you to go to their shop to buy things. You cannot go somewhere else to buy something. You have to buy from Apple, which is, again, I thought, and luckily Windows didn't do that, because if Windows did this, Windows would be sued to the ground. Now, the fact that Apple can get away with this, again, I think eventually people are going to start waking up saying, oh, no, but you're becoming like, really, like monopoly. You own everything. That's not fair.
It's always been their approach, though. I mean, it's the so-called walled garden. They want to own the whole ecosystem.
Yes.
And it's actually, to be fair, it's worked very well for them, because it's allowed them to integrate their software, their operating system, and the hardware very tightly.
That's the problem. It's benefiting them, but not the developers.
Yeah.
Because that's what all the developers complain about. We've even had those cases where developers should make programs and then Apple will make their own home-based version that's the same as their app and then just completely destroy their competition. Apple has been known for doing that, where they, you made something, we'll copy your design and we'll make it our own name and then sell it or give it for free, and then they bury that other company because what are you going to do? That's the problem with having such a monopolistic company controlling everything, where they don't really care about the actual people that make the software for their platform. They only care about their own interests over everything else.
Yeah.
So there is some advantages with it. So because you've got tight control about your software and hardware, so it's easy for you to specifically make software for it. Again, that kind of screws you a bit later on, because it means, oh no, if you want this version of operating system, you have to have the latest Apple hardware. So what are you going to do with your old phone? You're just going to throw it away? Apple has been good at supporting their stuff for quite a while, but at some point they just tell you, sorry, goodbye, you can't use your stuff again. Again, you can install Windows 10 on a machine that's, what, from 20, 2007, 2005, you can go all the way to 2001. You can install Windows 10 on a machine that has DDR2 still on it, and Windows 10 will still work on it. You can't get that with Apple. They want you to buy a new hardware platform because the software is only catered for that new hardware. So it's a difficult battle, but Apple has been smart with the M1 chip though. That is,
I do want to ask, but just lastly on Intel and Apple, Pat Gelsinger, one of the first things he said when he took over as CEO of Intel again, a couple of years ago now, or a year ago, was he said one of his priorities will be getting Apple back as a customer. Do you think there's any chance in hell that's ever going to happen?
Not anytime soon. Probably there's maybe a chance in like 10 years, but nothing anytime soon. Like, not in his time when he's CEO there. That will happen. Straight. It's Apple now has their own hardware. They know the profits they can make. They have the money to do it.
Yeah.
Unless.
Yeah, and making a change like an architectural change like this is not a simple thing. I mean, it's not a case of just saying, okay, well, let's just put our own chips in these. Designer put our own chips in these machines. There's a lot of work that has to happen behind the scenes.
They put the groundwork there because it's literally just they've just taken what they've done on the phones and made it on desktop. That's it. So it wasn't as difficult because they've already done most of the difficult work.
Okay.
That's the advantage there. That's the genius of it. It's like, that's right. Even me, I was a couple of years ago, I'm like, why can't they just take the phone and put it in an all-in-one? Why did it take Apple so long to realize, why don't you just put it in there? Most people will be happy with that performance. If you take the latest Apple phone and you just put it on an all-in-one, I think most of the Apple user base would be happy with that. And the fact that it took them so long is a bit like, actually, now you think about it, why didn't they just do it way quicker? Yeah. Like, what the hell? And like,
I suppose the challenge, what I'm saying is the challenge was for Apple was that you had to get all this legacy software, which wasn't necessarily going to be ported across or
I think that's now what, again, most of the people that use Apple devices are in the Apple iTunes ecosystem. So most of those software still works there. So I presume now in the PC market, if they're going to go hardcore, like they are now doing, you have to make more performance tiered CPUs and so forth because you want to sell it now to creators. Hence, they're going back to the creator focus. Most of the adverts is for creative and look how fast it is. Look how fast it is in Adobe. It's all about creation stuff. They don't really tell you you're going to go faster on Word or Excel because you can do that on your phone and it's pretty much just as fast as you would do it on your PC.
Exactly. So, now, if you remember 20 years ago, you needed a fast computer to be able to fire up Microsoft Word quickly.
Well, Excel and all those things.
Waiting for
but
and Outlook.
Now, so that's why I'm like, I'm impressed. It's good for Apple to come in because they're one of the few companies that actually have the money to make their own chip. I do think it was a benefit. Even to Intel, it's actually a benefit because it woke them the hell up when they Apple just went and said, oh, you know what? We're not buying chips from you now. Bye-bye. And you're losing. That was a good couple of 100 million units that they lost there. Like a good couple of, probably in it.
Yeah.
That's a good quantity of orders that you've just lost.
Billions and billions of dollars.
So, profit-wise there, I don't know if it's billions because Apple's is a bit of a prick. They got chips cheaper than Dell and HP. They bought less. That's how stupid Apple is. Always, they've got that we special. You need to always treat us special.
Well, that's what Tim Cook is famous for. I mean, it's the supply chain that he manages that's made Apple the success it is. It has become since the exit of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, there's problems with that as well because I'm not a big fan of Foxconn, but he's a good businessman. It's all about the profits at the end of the day for him. So that's all he really cares
about. I mean, they went Intel in whenever it was back in the early 2000s or even maybe in the late 1990s. It was the 2000s. What if AMD wasn't capable of taking on that business back then? They obviously AMD has grown in stature and grown as a business in that time. I do wonder why Apple never contracted with AMD at some point later on to just supply chips.
Too late. By the time AMD started making Zen 1 and so forth, Apple was already busy making their own chips. So it was just too late. And even, let's say even if AMD just doesn't have the manufacturing capability to make the amount of chips that Apple needs. Like AMD can barely keep up with their own orders now already. Imagine you had to now ask AMD, no, you now need to give us another 500, 600 million chips. They can't. I don't see that. It was possibly, depending on how, if you could change the past and play around, then yes, AMD could. But in the current world, even then, it's the first thing that just kills that immediately is just like it was already too late. By the time AMD started to be a thing, Apple already moved to their own chip. So it was already set in motion. It might be interesting to see how things change if AMD goes stupidly aggressive and they keep on targets. It would be interesting to see how capable is Apple to keep up with AMD. Because it's going to be interesting to see how AMD is going to go further up with their performance tiers and see how Intel matches. Because at the low end now, when you look at the normal, at the low end chips from AMD and so forth, the 6000 series. Which is a bit cheating because Intel, Apple launched their chip last year. So last year, even now, Apple's chip is still the most power efficient chip that you can buy for normal office use and so forth. It beats AMD and Apple out. Now, AMD and Intel can win once you plug the laptop in with the AC. Then AMD wins handsomely. And if you've got an NVIDIA card in there and you're doing editing and so forth in, I would really say edge cases, then yes. AMD and Intel still have a lead there, but only when you plug it in. As soon as you unplug it and it runs on battery, Intel wins most of the cases. AMD now has caught up considerably with the sixth generation stuff that's coming out now and so forth. That's brought it much closer, but Apple still wins there with power efficiency.
The power efficiency is actually amazing. So maybe we should dive in at this point into the actual technology behind these chips. So they've announced a whole a succession of these M1 chips. The original one was announced, I think it was in the back end of 2020, if I remember correctly. And they announced that the first the machine they put that in was the Mac Mini, and I think they also put it into one of their laptops or a couple of their laptops, the Mac.
It was
a 13-inch MacBook Pro, and I think they may have put it into a MacBook Air as well, if I remember correctly, and those original machines. They then came out with the MacBook Pros last year, and that was the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, and then they made a big deal, and I'm going to use non-technical terminology here. You can correct me and tell me what the correct terminology is, but they basically started plugging these chips together to create more performance, and they bragged in their keynotes
with the Max
about the speed at which these chips can move data between each other. And more recently they announced the M1 Ultra, which was once again putting more of the same silicon, stitching it together. And the rumor is they're going to be announcing either the M1 Extreme or the M2 Extreme at Worldwide Developer Conference in June, which presumably will then go into the Mac Pro, which is the last machine from Apple that is still running on an Intel processor. So what are they doing exactly? I mean, they started with the single piece of silicon in the M1, which went into those original machines, which was a great piece of kit. I'm using it here in our Mac Minis in the office, and it performs very well. Just take us through it. What are they doing exactly with the M1 and then the M1 Pro and the Max and then the Ultra, and how are they stitching these chips together exactly? I understand it's a technique that's been perfected by their manufacturing partner TSMC.
Yes.
But what is it actually allowing them to do that maybe Intel and AMD aren't doing?
Okay, so maybe now, this is the thing that really saved Apple, is TSMC. Okay. That's also maybe one of the other reasons why I think Apple left Intel. It's because they started working so well with TSMC, with their phones and so forth, and iterations there. They could see TSMC's roll-up and map-ups and stuff that they're starting to innovate on. Intel might have had it there, but they never showed Apple to say, this is stuff we're working on, all this type of stuff. So I don't know if you want to open the couple of links I have. Yeah, there. Sure.
So we've got 3D Fabric, CoWoS Info, and SOIC.
Yes. So most of these technologies is, if we start with the first one and so forth, it's basically having more integration. So you can start having more chips doing different things connecting to one another.
Okay.
So that's the main advantage that they start to show. First of all, let's look at the smartphones. The smartphones are just small, power efficient. You're talking in the milliwatt type of range of power usage. So small chips, I produce. You want to use the smallest node as possible because density is key. You want to make the thing as small as possible to use as little power as possible. So TSMC also won there massively over Intel because Intel lost the whole plot there with being stuck on 14 nanometer. And then TSMC was like getting 7 nanometer. And then from 7, they went to 4. And the fact, because Apple was buying so many chips from TSMC, they could then say, sweet, they can just buy more allocation. They've got the money. They can buy more allocation from TSMC and saying, sweet, now we can make our own chips on our own factory. And we can design it how we want to. And there we go. And then they have all these options for different use cases, how they can design their chip and so forth. So basically between this, now the first one you've got there is mainly to do with HBM and so forth, and then in terms of your SoC. So this comes from, if you now go to the one that says JET-R, there's a good illustration there, middle one at the top.
The
one that says
this one. Sorry, I was on a different tab. There we go.
Yes. So there's that one. Then you'll see the next one there. So you can actually see there where you've got the substrate, you've got the interposer, and then you've got the two SoCs next to one another, and then HBM. So this tech gives them ability to have different. You can have one piece of tech, and then you can actually have different things connected to it.
Okay.
So now with TSMC giving them these abilities. And again, a form of this, what they're already doing, they're using this, but instead of using HBM, they're just using normal DRAM. So if you open, I don't know if you've got a proper photo of the Intel chip.
I do not.
Let me open it here quickly.
So what is HBM? What is HBM?
HBM is now just high bandwidth memory. So that is more for GPUs and so forth. But I'll share something here quickly. Let me share.
Sure. Let me stop sharing from my side.
Then I'll share this. Share. Window. Share. So this was, I think, the original Mac. This is now from Wikipedia. You can see there's the memory. Mm-hmm. And then on the PCB and so forth. They're connecting this memory module directly to the actual CPU or to the SoC.
Is this, what are we looking at here? Is this the M1?
Yes, this is the original M1. Okay. Yeah. So underneath that chip is the actual SoC. So what a SoC means is just a system on chip. So because you've got your GPU, CPU, memory controllers on there, everything is on there.
Mm-hmm.
So the PCI Express, your USB controller, everything will sit on that chip. And now they've got the memory attached to that, which also helps with latency and then also with power efficiency. Because, and again, it's also physically smaller. So you don't have to actually add more RAM onto the PCB and so forth. Hence, it kind of screws you a bit because then you can't upgrade a unit. You buy what you get. You don't have any choice. So that has its pros and its cons. Apple's
commercial model.
Yes, exactly. So the enthusiasts go, oh, no upgrade. I can't just buy the cheap one and just make it better. And no, you buy the best one or you buy the worst one and then you stuck with what you bought.
And if it breaks, you buy another one.
Yeah, after a year. Or if you didn't buy the, what's it, Apple Care. And yeah, and then you're going to get screwed. So unfortunately, Apple's not really nice there. But the problem is it's one of those things where they don't. You've got a choice. The problem is, if you go modular, you will lose performance.
Right.
So I kind of feel painful for them because it's like, it's doomed if you do, doomed if you don't. So I would say go for the better performance, which they have, and this does help. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why the Apple chips were so quick, is because they have direct access to the memory. They don't have to go through a bus, through the PCB, into a DIMM slot to get the fetch the memory and take it all the way back. So
why is Intel not doing this?
Well, because you need to make it upgradable. You can't sell this to a customer. The PC market would riot if you did this. You lose sales.
Even the laptop market.
Even the laptop market. Like, you can't see them trying to do that. You've seen them doing that. You can get laptops where the 8 gig is soldered and you can't upgrade it. But then it's soldered on the PCB. So you're not really, you're making the unit thinner, but you're not really making it better. You would have made it better if you actually literally fuse the memory on the same PCB and directly to the CPU. So the CPU has direct access to the memory. Problem is, this is more expensive to do. So first of all, it's more expensive. Second of all, you have to actually now make a memory controller that actually interfaces with these things directly. You need to also now get very specific memory, because I think this is all going to be memory from, probably from Samsung, I presume this is from, if I have to guess. So.
Probably.
Yeah. So I thought, well, it now requires tighter control of what you get and the systems. And then again, you need to make sure there's enough stock to buy all those type of stuff. Whereas PC market, you make the chip, you put it in, and the RAM is someone else's problem. Now it's your problem. You have to make sure you've got the RAM in stock that you can put in there. And again, I presume there were some weird times when there was the shortages and so forth, and logistics was stupid because, again, you're buying this from some place and that company you're buying this from, at least this is what is easy because the chip is from TSMC. The PCB is probably from some other company that like specializes in, on PCBs, but they even had delays. You still need to get the load, and then you need to get the memory. So there's a lot of logistics to get all of that together and make sure it gets to the same place.
And logistics is what Apple is very good at.
Yes and no sometimes.
Superb.
It's superb. Basically for, because they have such a domineering thing, it is easier for them to do. But I think they had, like any company, they had troubles. Like that's why certain things sold at low volumes, or certain countries didn't get it at certain places. Because again, you're smart. You first sell it to first world countries that you've got enough stock of them. When the inventory builds up, then you can ship it to other third world countries and second world countries or whatever. So no one came out of this clean. Like I thought it was like when COVID happened, logistics kind of screwed everyone. Like even Dell, HP, even the big guys, even Samsung struggled sometimes, even with their own phones. So it just working with TSMC gives them the ability to do different things and integrate more things that you would say, oh, damn. And that's the problem with Intel. This is what Intel was supposed to do, is innovate in packaging, because they were the manufacturing prowess company. We make the best chips. We manufacture the most chips. We manufacture the most advanced stuff. And they kind of lost the whole plot and gave that to TSMC. And TSMC now has even more different. So in the 3D fabrics, they even have different, I think it's what's at the info, which is now basically, this is getting close to where I think, what we'll do is we'll share the one from, where is the interconnect? Yeah, I will share from Anantech. Okay, this just shows the actual complexity of the chip. So actually when I zoom in,
I should want to control plus on your keyboard. There we go.
So here's the small M1. So here you can actually see it's a, this is what they call a SoC.
Pro.
So this is the actual system on chip. So you've got your GPU over here. You've got your CPU over there. You've got your, that's the I accelerator there. You've got the actual DDR5 memory controller sitting on each side. Then there's the actual, I think that's cache or something, I think, on these.
This is the Pro. So this is two of these M1s stitched together.
No, this is just the, Pro. This is not when they stitch together yet. The Pro is a different design.
I thought the Pro was two of them stitched together.
I think the Max is the one that's connected together.
The Max has got, I forget. I thought it was four of them stitched together in the Max.
No, so these ones, okay, well, this is the actual integration tech that you've actually seen. So this is what TSMC now gives out to companies to basically AMD and to Apple and all other companies that would like to make a chip from them. So there you actually see the actual difference there. You've got the actual substrate, and then you've got the two chips that you now link with one another through a die, so that you can actually have two chips actually connecting to one another. So you make fabricate them in two places. So again, to Apple's advantage, now you can make a chip, make more chips. If you need higher performance, you just take two of them and put them together. If you want, if you want to sell it for laptops and so forth, just take one and put them in the other laptop market. It's again. Right. This is basically copying what AMD did, making chiplets. You can sell them either on desktop or server market. It's easy then to scale if you want to scale and so forth. So this was the ingenious with him going with TSMC, and then gives Apple the opportunity to do this type of stuff. And this is also probably going to come to phones as well. So don't think like, oh, this is just for, this is also going to come to phones eventually. When they make this small enough and power efficient enough, you're going to have more phones instead of having, because even on phones, when you look at the PCB of phone, you'll see there's plenty of different chips on there and so forth, doing all kinds of different things and so forth. The more you can integrate all of those things into one chip, your cost of manufacturing goes down and the complexity goes down. Having one thing go that can go wrong is better than having 10 different things that can go wrong.
So for the company making it anyway.
Well, again, everybody kind of benefits because you start moving all that intellectual property in, like AMD, same as Apple. Apple uses, I don't know if they've had, I presume their laptops have built-in USB. So if we go back to one of these designs, you will probably see the USB controller somewhere built in. They still have to pay USB for it. It's not as if they're still using it for free or something. So this company will still make money from them. It's just, it's easier and more efficient technically, because again, if you make a separate chip, you have to make it somewhere separately, which requires shipping, which requires transport, which costs more money. So then you're wasting more stuff in like environmental damage, shipping more things somewhere else to get it assembled. So if you can streamline that and have it in one place, then it actually is better overall for everyone. Again, you might now start killing off competitors and so forth, because I would assume NVIDIA would have been very happy if Apple went to NVIDIA and got their AI cores from NVIDIA and put it on there. Then they use their own one. But we're going to start seeing that simplification where, unfortunately, the smaller companies will probably bowled over by like AMD and Apple and Intel. Will just start integrating more. And same as Apple, like AMD now. AMD's also moved everything to one chip. They don't have a system on chip anymore, where you've got the South Bridge, because traditionally the South Bridge will have all your like USB controllers and so forth. That's all merging into one chip instead of having more chips. So it was ingenious design from Apple. And again, kudos need to go to Apple engineers to do this, because this is doing stuff that I think AMD is probably trying to do and so forth. The problem is like, I think they don't have the ecosystem where they can push this. You asked, again, not really, because again, AMD has the advantage of Sony and Microsoft buying Xbox from them.
Right.
So AMD has military contracts as well. So I presume they do stuff like this, but not to the consumer. Apple can bring out these advanced stuff that's quite expensive to do and complex.
Yeah.
And mass produce it, because you're not making a couple of thousand. You're making a couple of tens of millions of these things you're making.
Yeah.
So again, kudos needs to go to the engineers figuring this stuff out and so forth. And out engineering Intel. That's where you should really go. I'm like, ooh, Intel,
So what does this actually mean for Gerard, for Intel in the longer term? Because we've heard rumblings that Microsoft is going to make its own chips or design its own chips, Apple. Because of course, Microsoft always wants to do what Apple's doing. Is that a feasible possibility? I know we've seen Google talking about coming up with their own chips for their smartphones. I don't know if they have the sort of scale that would justify that. You're saying no? Microsoft has been making noises about doing
this. Google, I can see, perhaps, but no. That's a difficult one.
For their Surface lineup?
At this point of moment, if you're trying to do this now, you're too late. You should have done this 4 years, 5 years ago.
All right.
You're too late now to jump on the boat. It would now be cheaper to literally go to AMD and say, AMD, again, Valve did it. Valve went to AMD and said, we need a portable chip that we can put on a console. And again, Valve did this for other reasons as well, because Apple needs to get, Valve needs to get experience, because they want to push VR quite well. And again, I told people, you can already see the breadcrumbs. What they're doing now with AMD now is just what a leap step frog of we will go with VR. They are going to have AMD-powered VR machines coming out in the next probably 3 to 4 years, if not hopefully sooner. So
you're talking about the Steam Deck
Steam Deck. AMD has a good tradition now and a reliable tradition of making chips for other people. They've got Sony orders, Xboxes with them. They've got military orders, hospital stuff as well. you'll be amazed how many medical devices and so forth have Apple, AMD stuff now built in. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. So AMD has a reliable way where you can go to AMD, sit with the engineers, design a chip that's kind of unique to you. There's similarities, even if you now take Microsoft's console versus Sony's console and so forth, and you compare the two. There's differences, but there's also a lot of similarities with it. Again, that also gives AMD a massive advantage because, again, they now learn from both of them. So when Sony pioneers or innovates something, AMD can learn from that. And if Microsoft pioneers and learn, then AMD can distill and learn from them as well. So I think for other companies, it's probably going to be much easier to just go to AMD and say, make us a chip for us and so forth on x86. Or, again, AMD has an ARM license. I would not be surprised. I know AMD had worked on one, and then they kind of put it on hold because it's like, we don't have enough people to focus on making x86 and ARM, but they do have an ARM architecture chip that I think Kelo designed for them. So they do actually have a high-performance ARM core. So AMD can, again, now look at those. If there's a company big enough to go and say, that's what I tell people. It's like, that's what Google would go. Google, go to AMD, because AMD has now the advantage now working with TSMC. It's much easier for AMD to make a chip that equals Apple than any other company.
Right.
So that, because again, it's not just making a chip that's same. You need to have the expertise to make the packaging. So now this is where we can criticize Apple a bit, because the packaging that they're using now at the moment from TSMC is basically the basic versions. They're doing the typical Steve Jobs thing. Looking around, seeing what's done and say, oh no, we can actually use that in a better way. But they're not really pioneering in that field.
Mm-hmm.
I don't expect Apple to make the newest, bestest gen interconnect ever. That's not what I expect from them. Because again, I don't.
They are leaning heavily on TSMC. No. But when you say packaging, what do you mean by packaging?
Well, it's basically having different things. So like if you go to TSMC, you want to design a chip. They will give you now all their documents and all those things. You still need to inside know how to use that stuff. So same as AMD, like AMD now pioneered basically. AMD was the first company to have the interconnect with their, the GPU that they sell to data centers and so forth. That they launched end of 2020. Yeah, end of 2020. They launched that chip. That was the first. Oh no, 2021. That was end of last year that they launched that chip. That was the first chip to have interconnect. That thing can interconnect. Like Apple claims, 800 gigabits per second. AMD one is doing like terabytes per second. So I can, you literally went to the most basic version that TSMC sells and you use that. Again, you still need to implement it. So it's not as if you're being dumb, but it's like you're not innovating in that. AMD went with TSMC and innovated a new way of making it go stonk fast. So, and then again, we'll probably see that end of this year. Well,
keep something aside to put in the M2 and the M3, right?
Yes. Well, again, it's now again, you need to learn how to mass produce them as well. So it's not just a fact of like, you can make the chips. Like I tell people like Intel can make amazing chips. We've already seen leaks of Intel's new servo chips and how great they are. And that's like, you can only really use it if you could buy it, and you can't buy it. So all good that you've got it there in your own little factory, but can you mass produce it? And then you go, no, we can't. I'm like, you see now that's the problem. So when it comes to mass production, doing something in small scale is easy. Doing something in a big scale, much more difficult. So that also gives now Apple has the advantage because they buy so much chips from TSMC. They will always get the latest node, which is a bit weird.
Yeah, deep pockets. They can just go in. I mean, TSMC must love having Apple as
It's basically like given money because you're going to get now all the Apple orders in terms of phones. You're going to all get their laptop orders and all their desktop orders. So TSMC is smart. Woo, go for it. We'll help you out as best as we can. But I'm already seeing that they're not really going out of their way to help them, which is a bit weird. Because
in what way?
Well, how can I put this? Like the AMD has Vcash that Apple doesn't have. Like bolting more cash onto the chip. Now, again, there's implementation costs there and you need to know what you're doing there. So I don't think Apple has the expertise there to necessarily do that. But again, it's like you can look at all the AMD chips. It seems that I presume it may be maybe I'm miscuing it a bit and so forth, because AMD has a bit more knowledge in manufacturing. Because when you look at AMD's manufacturing, they always get a different node than everyone else now.
Mm.
So, yes, they are six, but it's their six. It's not everyone else's six. So, when I thought it was like, when they sell 4-nanometer to, now NVIDIA is going to buy 4-nanometer and Apple 4-nanometer, they use 4-nanometer. When AMD gets 5-nanometer, that 5-nanometer is unique to Apple. No one else gets that 5-nanometer that AMD has. Right. So you can already see, even TSMC is going extra effort with AMD and giving them more advanced stuff than the other guys.
Mm.
But again, I presume that's now coming from AMD actually contributing to them and helping them a lot with making these new packaging stuff. Because the other companies aren't really going out to help them making these packaging. So again, AMD is coming that traditional, when we help everyone. We don't help ourselves. When we help you,
as you mentioned previously, though,
so
as you've mentioned previously, though, TSMC and AMD have had a very close relationship for a number of years.
Especially since AMD really rocketed up now and so forth. Again, TSMC sees AMD as every chip AMD sells is a chip that Intel isn't selling.
Yes.
Which is a good way to look at it from TSMC's perspective, because that means they make money. And you can see they've been making stupid money. Like their profit margins are, I can think they're all smiling from eye to eye. In terms of profiteering from there. So, that's now where the only thing I'm not going to see there, where we're going to start seeing Apple focus now, is on accelerators. Especially in for one of the reasons why the Apple chips are so quick, is there is cheating.
Yes.
Intel would call it cheating, but I would really call it just being playing smart, because it's to do with how the core actually works. So that's where a lot of your like speed comes from. Is
right
in terms of how why it feels so quick and responsive is the chip has, because everything is now so tightly interconnected, the memory controller, the storage controller, everything is connected together, so it's much easier now for the chip and the CPU to pull information from those actual places now, from those controllers. So now it's easier for the scheduler to start scheduling, saying, sweet, this guy does this and this operations very repeatedly. I can now predict what he's going to do and then already start loading up memory in the front, in the back end, because he already knows what you're going to do. And then that's why you feel it so quick, because it knows it starts to realize your pattern. Most CPUs do this now. They start seeing a pattern. When you boot up your machine, the chip actually starts learning. That's what one of those AI cores in Apple does. It actually learns what your pattern is when you open what, and then actually starts front loading all of those things.
It's clever.
Which is ingenious.
It's very clever.
Now, there's some strengths and weaknesses with it, which we'll come to now, because you can really hurt yourself later on with that. But it makes the chip stupidly snappy. Like an amazingly snappy. And that's what Apple now like, whoa, this is now good stuff coming. And again, it's only going to get better. So it's like the chips now, it's going to be interesting to see where they're going to start innovating, because I presume having more cores, I don't really would benefit that much. Honestly, I thought most people will be happy with an 8-core chip, probably just a faster 8-core chip. So the single core would be quicker. But again, you can, they'll probably start innovating in the AI cores, making the AI cores more intelligent in terms of where you can use them and so forth. Very similar to what NVIDIA now does with CUDA and so forth. So I think, I wish Apple had the same like software, like ability as NVIDIA. Which would be dangerous, but would be great, because Apple would then actually make it easier for developers to actually use all the hardware they have inbuilt into their machine. Because that's, I can see that's kind of a bit of a problem for Apple now. Because that integration there is tight, but it's at the moment, it only really benefits a few people. And it takes, it seems to take them quite a long time to actually get that right. Because even like, how long, like, you can get the, like, the emulation thing is Rosetta, right?
Rosetta 2, yes.
Now, even, it works, but it's not, like, 100% working. So you can still see there's certain applications.
Slow. It's, some apps are slow. Yeah. Like, Evernote was terribly slow at emulation.
Exactly.
Now that they've released an Apple Silicon version, it's exactly. As fast
but
as
now,
the other.
How long did it take them to make an Apple? Literally, it took them almost a year. What's it? No, probably less than a year. Probably 2 years.
Year and a half.
Year and a half. That's quite long. That's quite bad, actually. Now I think about it. That should be something.
I think that maybe Evernote's problem rather than
But the problem is now it's the same as game developer and all those type of things. It's your job as hardware vendor to make it as easy as possible. Look at NVIDIA. If you make it easy as possible, you can make stuff great and people will then be stupidly loyal to your brand. If you make it easy, look at CUDA. Very easy to use for most software guys. That's why they own that market. So I wish I wish they would do that. So
I mean, I think that kind of leads us in nicely into a discussion on gaming on Mac. I mean, these chips have got amazing GPUs in them. Well, they seem on paper to be amazing GPUs. I mean, on these high-end MacBook Pros, I think you're looking at a 32-core GPU. I don't know what that actually means in real-world performance.
Yeah, no, that's so difficult.
On paper, it looks like these would potentially be great gaming machines. Yet, you look at the games that are available on Mac, and they tend not to be AAA titles that you know, you need top-end graphics. Those titles,
it's not your Call of Duties and your Counter-Strikes and all that type of
thing. Exactly. Is that going to change? Is M1 going to? Is Apple Silicon going to bring gaming to the Mac? Make it a first-class citizen like it is on PC?
That will depend on Mac. The problem is Mac is very anti-gaming for how the industry is now. Because the problem is in industry now you're going up against Sony, Microsoft. Yep. You're going up against Epic. Epic would probably want to make their stuff on there. So first of all, you're playing with the big players, the Sony, the Microsoft. You're going up against big known industries. So that's the first problem. Apple is not good at being nice to other people.
But it's a big industry, and they'd love to have a part of it.
That's right. Mobile is quite popular because the problem is Apple wants a cut of everything. The gaming industry doesn't want to give them a
mobile. Mobile games.
You see,
yeah.
In Windows doesn't ask the game developer, give me 30% of your profits. If you want to install a game from Steam, you install it, there you go. Windows doesn't want a cut. Doesn't Adama want a cut. Apple wants a cut from everything. And that's what would kill gaming there.
Certainly that's true on mobile, but not so much on desktop. I mean, on Mac OS, it's very much like Windows. You download apps. I mean, they've got a Mac app store. There's also a Windows store, which no one really uses.
Well,
you download apps and
but the problem is, if it's on the app store, if you sell something on the app store, Apple takes a cut.
Yeah. Yes.
If Steam is...
But that's mainly on mobile, right? I mean...
No, even on desktop, if you use... that's where Apple is going. Apple wants everything on... If you buy something, they want you to buy it from
them. But they can't do that.
Of course they can.
They can't exactly say you can't download your software from a website.
Well, that's what they're trying to do. Can you load other software on your phone? On your iPhone, you cannot load any other software that is not from that my store.
No.
Same happens with on PC. They're going to do the same thing.
It's similar to Android. I mean, you could sideload an APK on Android, but most people just use
the Play Store. Exactly. And the problem is the gaming industry doesn't like that. Because the problem is the game is already R1,000 in South Africa.
Yeah.
Apple would want another 30% on top of it. Because again, Apple is not going to make the ecosystem and the software for your gaming development. So of course you're going to have to pay them because you need to pay them to make the software for you to make your game. DirectX, Microsoft has DirectX for that. On Linux, we've got now Vulkan and OpenGL and so forth, all being superseded by Vulkan, but you need Vulkan to work on that. Apple has their own version, which is Metal, but as far as I know, I don't think Metal has been optimized yet for the new stuff. And I can guarantee you now they're going to make sure that when they do go that route, they're going to tell you, no, you have to use our API, and our API only works on if you distribute it through our own iStore.
App Store.
And they're going to do it. That's why I tell people, that's what would – if Apple changes that, by all means, and they can show us, they allow Steam to be installed on their application, and Steam doesn't need to pay anything to Apple.
You can run Steam on Mac.
The problem is then the game developer needs to support Metal, and that's the problem, is supporting that implementation is quite stiff. So if they make a new implementation of it and they make it free to access and free to use,
yeah,
then yeah, there's a chance. Again, it will
it
be difficult.
It would not surprise me if gaming is in Apple's roadmap.
I don't know. They've never been.
And I think they know. They haven't, but they haven't.
There's a chance and so forth. I'm like, just like, that's my problem with Apple there. It's like, the game marketing isn't small. It's a massive market. Mm. But my problem is I can see already that greed in their eyes already saying, no, but we can't tap it more. No. We want to tap it for it.
And let's not forget, Apple is actually already a very big player in the gaming market. I think the game type of games we're talking about are PC-style games.
Yes, this is now more.
But if you look at casual games, and you go into the App Store on an iPad or an iPhone, and you see what the top grossing apps are, they're all games.
Yeah. But the problem is Apple takes 30% of whatever you make.
Yeah.
So it works for small scale, but you can't do...
Tim Sweeney and Epic are suing them.
Yeah, exactly. So I tell people, it's like... Mm. You could see Sweeney trying to do that, and you knew, like, that's why they wanted to do Fortnite on it. And it's something that you want to make money from, we want a cut of whatever money you make. Again, by all means, Sony and Xbox does that as well. But with them, at least, they work with the game developer. They give you a dev kit. They give you all these things. If you need someone, you can call someone. You don't get that type of service with Apple. Even if you're one of the best app developers for Apple, you still thumb tape takes weeks to get something out of Apple. Weeks. Yeah. And then the service you get is crap from what I've been told. From all the app developers that spoke to me, they hate dealing with Apple. Hate.
Very interesting.
Like, you can even look at some of Linus and Luke when they had issues with Flowplane, getting Flowplane working and so forth on the Apple Store. Like, utter bull crap that they had to deal with. It is tremendously how bad Apple is. Like, amazing for the amount of money they make. I'm like, dude, if this was a good corporation in the good old days, holy crap, those good corporations would smack Apple because it is so ignorantly run. Like, and this is worse than YouTube. And I would say probably on the same level as YouTube's. Like, if you give video gets claimed and so forth, that type of bull crap. That's how bad Apple. And again, I can't understand because there's so many apps. But it's your own fault. You went and made it completely open, and there's a crap ton of rubbish on there. It's just same as Android. Android probably has more rubbish on it, but again, you would think Apple's ecosystem is so enclosed, and you look at list of Apple apps, the camera apps and stupid stuff and all that type of jazz, tons of the things. So I understand where they come from. You can only employ so many people to filter all those things, but then you should cut that down. You should actually have a better way to do this now. For a company that's that big as Apple, you should have spent...
They're very good at making money. They're very good at making money.
You're good at making money if you don't spend any. That's the problem there. They're not really spending the money in places where I would say, just spend the money there to make it easier for consumers to use. Employ more people to be able to make your platform better. And they just go, too much work, too much effort. Or that's the impression they're giving me, is they just don't care. We're already making so many money. Why should we actually improve it? And it's like, you see now you're falling in that same trap. Yeah, Intel now fell into. You're becoming complacent. And then you're waiting for some other dude that does what you didn't do, and then you get screwed. So I like how these companies make the same mistakes over and over and over and over again. I'm like, guys, you guys are getting paid stupid money as CEOs, and you make the same mistake. Again and again and again. I'm like,
they get greedy.
Wow, guys.
They get greedy.
It's not just a bit of greed. It's just sometimes just they either don't think about it or just too much stuff on their plates. That's probably also what happens there. But someone should be able there to smack them a bit and say, hey.
So I want to talk a bit about the battery life of the M1. It's very impressive. I've got one of these MacBook Pros, and the battery life on that is a good 10 hours if I'm hammering it. Even longer if I'm just doing basic stuff on it, which is absolutely astonishing for a laptop. I think if you really, are doing it for basic things, you keep the brightness of the screen down, you can get more than 15, 16 hours on this thing.
Yeah, easily.
Not quite as much as Apple claims, which I think is 19, 20 hours. But still, it's very, very impressive. You can get on a a flight from Joburg, you can fly to New York, and you can still have juice left in your battery, yeah, in your laptop at the end of the flight, which I've never seen on a Windows laptop. Now, I admit I've historically used these very thin Dell XPSs and things like that, which probably
again they were the best
batteries inside them. Dell, but still,
it's yeah. I would say yeah. AMD's.
But
continue. So
I was just going to ask. So they've done amazing stuff. How has Apple managed to get the battery life so long on these devices using these M1 chips? Is it all down to the node that they're using from TSMC? Are they making very good use of efficiency cores in these chips? And then following on from that, is the PC industry going to benefit from some of the innovation we've seen here? Are we going to see Windows laptops with 15 to 20 hour battery life coming out soon?
So, first question in terms of efficiency. So they're using the latest node. So they already have a leg up compared to Intel and AMD, especially against Intel. So the node it does help, but the node isn't everything. Mm-hmm. The other benefit they have is they're using ARM. The ARM chip is designed specifically, the one they're using from ARM Corporation that they're integrating there, specifically for power efficiency. It is in the millivolts of power usage they use. Most desktop CPUs and laptop chips that you're using on your PC, they go into the volts of power they're using.
Right.
So if you're talking about, here's a chip that works in the millions of volts versus a chip that goes in the volts to use power, the one has a massive advantage. And again, there is advantage because they're using ARM. ARM is a more cut down, more efficient. There isn't really a lot of overheads with it. On Windows PCs, you have to have overhead because it's x86. x86 is a more power. Just doing a normal instruction on x86 uses more power than ARM. So from the gate, I doubt there's a chance for AMD and Intel to even come close.
Right.
There's probably ways they can cheat, which I'll talk about now where AMD is starting to cheat and you can start seeing them becoming very smart with x86 and so forth. But again, credit to credit due. Apple has made a very power efficient chip, and they've also made it so where certain parts of the chip would shut down. So they would literally, certain parts of like the USBs and so forth, if you don't use it and so forth, actually like completely like put it on like a super sleep state and there's almost no power going to it, which will save you a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because previously you didn't really do that, which is very difficult to do. Mm. Like designing a chip where you can cut power going to it and so forth, that's really complex work to do. That's like, wow, that's not easy work there. So you can see they've gone specifically and targeted all those areas, played to ARM's strength as well, because it is a very efficient architecture. So if you put that all in the package, good manufacturing node, good architecture, good power management, and you put it into a chip that's fairly small, again, smaller chips do benefit there. So you can't, I'll tell you straight, don't expect if they do bring the max chip out with the two freaking chips together, glued together, or basically stick together and so forth, and put it in a laptop, it will be the same power efficiency as the M1. It's not going to be, because it's a massive chip that you need to power. And the M1 Ultra is massive. I tell people, you need to keep that in mind. That thing is huge.
Yeah, it's on the screen now.
That thing physically, even when you look at it, I'm like, holy crap, the thing is kutsonkus. It looks like you can basically take an AMD, like space, getting close to AMD's Threadripper size. That's how big that socket is. Thing's huge. Not cheap. Massive, though, to make. So that takes a lot of space. And the bigger the thing is, the more energy it's going to use because you've got more resistance. So, again, they're going to play to their strengths and making small chips and then being able to just, as they go, they can add more things to make it scale for the application's going to, because you don't need hyper efficiency if you're going to use it on an all-in-one that's going to be plugged into the wall. You don't need it to be concerned there. So then you can boost the chips a bit more. That's where one area where you can see the actual cons with ARM is when you do give it juice, the AMD and the Intel ones just completely destroy it again. Like, and it's a bloodbath again.
Mm-hmm.
And so even with the laptop ones, the AMD ones, as soon as you plug the charger in, the AMD is 10, 15, sometimes 20% faster than the Apple's. So you can see even when the Apple's Mac is plugged in, it doesn't benefit that much even when it's plugged in. Because again, the chip can't scale. ARM can't scale with voltage.
I have noticed that.
So I told people it's like,
I have noticed
that's,
that.
It's, you can, and that's now the problem is you, we might see Apple. I would assume that's probably where they're going to, is they'll probably later on where they're going to have, where you see now with the Ultra chip where you've got two different chips. Eventually, yeah, they're not going to have them exactly the same. The one chip will be a high performance chip that they only make on like desktop and so forth. And then they bolt on the more efficient one that they use on the laptops. I think that's kind of where we're going to start seeing this go, where then the desktop one will have efficiency, where if you just using it for reading documents and so forth, it will power down the other part of the core, the other side of the chip, basically, and saying, shoot, you don't need all of that stuff. You can run this, all that. And then when you do need the performance, it just enables the other high performance part. And then there you go. It flies, goes off to the races. So I think that's coming, but that's probably going to be a couple of years before now. Now we still need to figure out how this, how you actually get two chips to work with one another with lower latencies and higher interconnects. And because latency is key. We actually, Apple, I would say, probably pushed it a bit more. And then with now with AMD, with higher caches and so forth, we started to see literally just put more cache on. More cache, more memory, faster memory, lower latency. You can kind of like brute force victory. Because that's one of the areas why the M1 chips are so fast, is they have a massive L1 and a massive L2. So I don't know if you want to bring that photo up again. I want to actually check and see if I can
see. Let me do that.
Just so that people can see how much space Apple is using just on like cache memory. It's stupid. It's actually amazing how bad it is. So zoom up in the panda.
Let me see if I can zoom in on this. Let me try. There we go.
So go to the M1 Max or something like that. And where is that? So,
there we go.
So when you look at that there and so forth, you'll see the actual, you'll see that center bit there where it looks like a crosshair.
Yes.
So those are the actual, I think those are the cores that surround it and so forth. All next to it there is the memory.
Those are the cores. You can see the cores. Yeah. You can see the cores. And the memory on the left and right. Yeah.
That's all the memory that's there. Now on the bigger ones and so forth, they'll have even in that, if you can, it's difficult. You have to zoom in more.
Well, these are just two same things stitched together.
You can zoom in even more. You'll see that crosshair actually is memory as well in it. And then when you zoom in more, you'll even see the core itself. Majority of the core is memory. Like literally half of that core there is memory. Only the small piece, like you'll see, it's like a small piece of that side there is the actual core. The rest of it's just memory. So, again, that's why they show, especially with when they did the benchmarks and so forth, they show quickly. It's because it literally loads the whole program in memory, in like super fast memory. So you can kind of cheat by it by just, when you do a task, it doesn't need to go out and go to like normal, like what I would call outside memory, out of bound memory. It just goes close to it and then does a task, and then the performance is like super snappy. So that's where you benefit there. Again, the problem is certain applications benefit from low latency. Other applications doesn't benefit at all. So that's why you'll see in benchmarks say, like, oh, Apple's like stupidly fast. And other applications, it's like, whoa, what the hell? Then you're actually more reliant on the actual core's performance than the actual memory performance.
So should the PC industry be looking on enviously at this tech or not?
AMD's already basically doing what Apple's doing already. So we've already seen 3D V-Cache. I think they've just launched in South Africa where they literally, here's the chip itself and we'll just on top of it actually superimpose another chip and then it will connect with one another. So if they, AMD's already been in the memory game and so forth. And we'll probably see with Zen 5, they will probably increase the L2 memory size will probably be increased. L1 might be increased as well. We'll have to see, but L2 will definitely be increased because they saw what Apple did and it. Mm-hmm. And again, IBM also did that. IBM is even more advanced. They don't even have L3 anymore. They only have L1 and L2 memory, but like in megabytes of it, which is like, whoa, that's because the most expensive part in the CPU is the memory, because that's normally the thing that goes faulty in manufacturing is the memory. So that's normally because you have so many of them. Literally, when you make it, you make each bit and so forth on there. So it's massively complex to make the memory on there. So they also use some power. They're not massively power hogs. But the problem is now you're dedicating a lot of die space to a lot of memory that in total uses quite a bit of memory. Same as RAM. If you like to look at the server stuff and so forth, even now when they go to 8-channel memory, the RAM uses more power than the actual CPU. So when you've got that amount of memory and stuff like that, there is a price to pay, but the performance is there. So you'll see AMD is there. AMD's already pioneered with local, like, same as Apple, having local area switch off. That's why with, I think AMD is the first laptop where, even with my older AMD laptops, the new ones, you can, I'm not joking you, I've had a customer, we've tested this, 11 hours video playback on an AMD laptop on Windows.
That's impressive.
And it's because it's dynamically switching off parts of the GPU and the CPU to make sure that not using needless power.
Yeah.
And I'm like, on a proper, like, the equivalent batteries, because again, Apple kind of, the bit cheats there because they use like massive batteries in their laptops, the 94 watt hour batteries and so forth. Normally on PC, the laptop would be cheaper because the reason it's cheaper because they're using like a 54 watt hour or 82 watt hour. And then now you'll see most of the new top end laptops from like ZenBooks and Dell XPSs and the HP Envys and so forth.
You can't fit the big battery in those things.
No, you can get 90, you can fit 94 watt hour batteries in like an MacBook and the small laptops. You can. They're very expensive batteries. Okay. They are like, I'm not joking. That's
denser batteries.
Well, it's just normal. I think that's lithium polymer that they use on those ones, but you can literally get, I'm not joking you, this size battery. That's 94 watt hour batteries. Down at this size.
I have a Dell XPS 13, which is running a sixth, could be an eighth, but I think it's a sixth generation Intel Core i7 processor. The battery life on that, I replaced the battery in it because the previous battery went. So I replaced the brand new battery. I'm lucky if I get 2.5 hours off that.
Yeah, now that's old school Intel. That's one. The problems with Intel now as well is because their laptops still are very reliant on the Southbridge and so forth. Apple's AMD's also consolidated all that tiny. Again, that's our advantage with TSMC with giving you more options with how you can fabricate the chips with them and the complexity you can add there. So Intel really needs to wake up in the laptop market because the 12th gen chips are fast. They're just not good at power yet.
Too power hungry.
That's my problem. They're hot and they're power hungry, even in laptop. Now, the laptop chip is stupid fast. Like, if you plug it in, that thing zonks and it makes Apple look stupid, and even the new AMD ones are a good 15 to 20% slower than Intel. The problem is your battery sucks and it's hot as hell. So I told you, like the AMD laptops for me, I already have customers that have already backordered some of the new AMD 6000 series or with Asus, ZenBooks, and I know Lenovo is going massive with AMD. Like, and I don't know what happened there.
Very interesting.
But a lot of the high-end corporate laptops that, because I know like Coca-Cola and a lot of the big American corporations have like massive deals with Lenovo, and all of those apparently are going to be in AMD, which is like, this is actually quite big that AMD is scoring that big deal with Lenovo. That's a big win. And it's because, the battery life is like stupid. I think AMD now helped them optimize their motherboards and all those things. They even have, I think, Windows laptops with the Lenovo design and so forth that's pushing like close to like 12 to 13 hours, which is,
I mean, for a laptop, I'm actually happy to take a performance hit if I'm not connected to power. Yeah. I'm happy to have a computer that's a little bit slow if I can get 50% better battery.
Yeah, no, that's the problem with Intel's architecture is it doesn't scale well down. I hope they change that with 14th gen and so forth, because I don't think 13th gen is going to be that much better. So I know AMD is already, as I said, AMD is probably the closest company that will be able to use x86 to match ARM, which again, I think even Apple would go, damn, these guys are really good. Because x86 is a power hungry monster if it wants to be. And it scales well. And again, the fact that AMD can get x86 to use as the
laptop. Great for desktops.
Even on laptop, AMD managed to get an x86 8-core chip down where you can, when you play a video for 11 hours. We've never seen that.
Yeah.
Like, you will struggle even with ARM tablets to get that. Which I thought was like, again, that's probably going to be the more expensive laptops from AMD. But again, Apple's laptops aren't exactly cheap. So,
No, they're not.
So again,
and I was going to ask, do you think Apple's going to win a chunk of PC users across,
especially from Intel? This is a game for Intel to lose. AMD, again, AMD is coming from a position of a low position. They can only go up. The only person here that loses is Intel. Apple will go up. AMD will go up. Apple's the only one that has market share to lose. No one else has.
Mac, as you alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, Mac users are very loyal and
a base.
A large subset of Apple users who will never go to Windows. They'll always stay on Mac. But that's not the same on Windows, is it? The people aren't as loyal to Windows. They'll say, oh, that Mac looks really nice. Let's go over there.
Yeah, the problem is with Windows. I'm in the fortunate position where I've had customers of both actually coming in. I would say even four. Yes. So I've had customers come in that only buy Apple, and they're like, I want to buy a PC because Adobe works better on PC and so forth. I'm like, before you buy something from me, I don't want you to buy it from me and then regret buying it from me. Please. Because I have seen that happen. I have seen Apple customers buy a Windows PC and they go, how great it is. And I don't like Windows. And I'm like, I warned you. You made this choice and I told you, dude, you need to make sure about this because it's not an easy change, especially if you're going to be a hardcore Apple user. Windows has a different mentality. Mm. So there's those customers that Apple that will try Windows but then fail. Then you also have the same customer that I've had people buy Apple and completely hate the living crap out of it because they're so used to Windows. Oh, really? I've literally had people like they bought it a week later, they sold it because they cannot. Like, yes, it's quick and so forth, but it's just. And for me,
I use both.
The main complaints come in, like, especially in corporate environments and even to some extent schools where they want to install stuff. I want to install this. Oh no, it doesn't work on Apple. I want to install. Oh no, this doesn't work there. Now Apple is kind of digging themselves out of that previous hole. That was the case. Mm. Now that's changing a bit with owning your own marketplace. So now they can, it's easier for them to actually have other developers come to them and develop stuff on the actual basically ecosystem of Apple. And then we'll now scale fairly decently from going from the actual phone to laptop to desktop. Mm. So that is one area I thought it was like, now I can probably see that probably being a bit easier. Again, in Africa, it's a very status thing. Again, people would buy Apple just because it's status and they would not know how to use it at all. They would come to us and say, I want to copy a photo. A simple thing like, I want to copy a photo from one place to another place. They can't even do that. Mm. They know to do it on Windows, but that basic thing of, you can just click on the thing and like, okay, there. But then basic other stuff, some people can just not comprehend on Apple at all. It doesn't make sense to them.
Very different. They're very different platforms. I like them both.
I'm in the same position where I'm like, I prefer Linux and Windows over Apple any day of the week. Apple for me just feels especially I'm a bit more of an advanced user.
Sure.
Apple does not want you to be an advanced user. It wants you to do the basic things, do your Word, your Excel, that's it. Don't ask me about what's going in the background. Please.
Well, actually, funnily enough, no, I have to disagree with you there because if you're a power user on Mac, you can fire up that shell and you can do stuff in that shell that you can do on Linux.
That's more leaning towards like the traditional Linux. It's not as
I know a lot of developers who use Mac because guys have actually gone from Linux to Mac because
code compilation and all that like stuff and so forth. There's Mac is based on Linux. It's
on Unix.
Well, it's based on Linux. It is literally a ripoff of Linux. It's the backend system that they use this literally from.
It originally came from BSD, if I'm not mistaken.
The modern iteration how we use now. Even the ARM implementation is even ARM.
Yeah.
Android is Linux based.
Mm.
They all.
Yeah, of course. It's all.
The Godfather is there.
It all has its origins in Unix.
Exactly. So I tell people the base is there. Yeah. So a lot of programming is used there. But I tell people it's simple. Mm. Like in Windows, you've got the task manager. I can open the task manager and can delete the task and it will end the task immediately. You don't do that. Again, Apple goes, you don't need to do that. which is fair point. You don't need to do that on Apple because generally it works. The app doesn't just...
You can do it. You can do it,
but it's not as simplistic for my point of view. Where most people go, open, you can open Task Manager, it's an easy thing to view, and there you go. It's easier to go into the registries if you need to go fix something in Windows. Even Linux sucks there. Like, you could see the videos when Linus and so forth, and I think Linus and what's the mate yet that does phone playing and so forth, they did the whole, we're going to do a month for Linux gaming and so forth, and the horrible experiences they had, the terrible stuff, like, freaking Linus somehow managed to delete the operating system doing through command prompt. You see, it's stupid stuff like that.
That's very easy.
Exactly. So I thought it was like, that's now what you get this with, even with Mac is also now having that bell curve where it goes, it's easy to use. There's no middle ground and then super complicated. So that's why you'll get the programmers using it because they know how to do, they know what they're doing. So they're advanced users, super advanced users. They're not advanced users. They are on a different tier, super advanced. I'm a more of an advanced user and so forth that's trying to dick around and do stupid stuff and so forth. And then, like Windows, you used to reg-edit and you can just go delete it and certain things if the game doesn't work and so forth. You can't do that on Mac. Mm. They don't give you that ability because the Mac assumes the thing works, which is a good assumption to have, but also a bad one because sometimes it breaks. And especially if you make your operating system more and more complex as it gets older, that's the problem with Windows, because it's such an old operating system that's been based on so many different iterations. And again, it makes it easier to develop on Windows PC as well. But again, Apple now has improved that. But I tell people, how many accounting packages work on Mac now compared to previously 4 or 5 years ago? You can now get QuickBooks on Apple, but it's not well optimized. Yeah. Not nearly as good as the Windows version. So I thought we'll look at basic stuff.
Most accounting is cloud-based anyway, through a web browser.
To an extent, again, we deal with a lot of companies who are small that are not. They're still using QuickBooks from 2007 and Pascal from 2005. So a lot of the small businesses and so forth don't have necessarily the money to pay
for running around with floppy disks.
Well, I'm not joking you. I have had people come in here with the old accounting stuff on stiffies. And floppies, on proper 5.5. Yeah. And so, is this the thing you were looking for? I'm like, I can't even plug this into your new laptop you just purchased. I can, maybe if it's a stiffy, I've got USB to stiffy, but floppies, how the fuck am I floppy? So that's now the thing. It's like,
next thing they'll ask if I can install Windows 3.1.
I'm not joking you. Some of them literally has stickers on. We're getting way off track here. So I tell people, We are getting way off track. That's where one area where Apple is now advantage for Apple and a disadvantage. So getting newer clients to Apple, if they are from that time period, is difficult. The newer generation, I presume, will be much more easier to accept into the new Apple ecosystem. It is. But I think Apple is going to start hitting more walls now with EU regulations. You already see the Europeans are going after Apple now. Hardcore. With the store, all that stuff, the charges. So Apple now has a big target on its head, and that will make their lives a bit more difficult. Will they improve themselves? I hope so. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to see how Apple is going to play this, being this giant, and people know they've abused their power. How are governments going to go and say, sweet, okay, do it this way, do it that way. How are they going to get it to do that? Interesting stuff there, you say.
For sure, for sure. I think we're going to have to wrap quite soon because we are an hour and a half into the podcast. But there is something on the show notes which I wanted to get to, which you've typed here. Something to do with security and the
this just broke like I think it was like 5 days ago or something like that, where basically because you're now a hardware vendor, you are now on the same leagues as Apple, as Intel and AMD. That will also mean you're going to make the same mess ups. And this one is quite of a big one. Now, I don't know how you pronounce that exactly, but it's Hungary or something like that, where this is quite a bad.
Augury. Yeah.
So this vulnerability is quite a bad one because, as I now told you before, because Apple has now more access to the memory and so forth,
Right.
This vulnerability gives them the ability to actually poison that whole memory access, and you can see what's going in that whole memory access. So when it now gets ready to like preload that memory, that preloaded memory, you can access that memory and see whatever is in there raw.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got passwords or Wi-Fi encryption passwords in there or anything that's in there, if you open Chrome and your passwords load up and your history of password to autocomplete, that data they can steal. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Focus. It's
out of focus.
Focus. I'm the blurry man. What the hell?
It should. It there should be focused automatically.
So it's getting better. So yeah. Okay. So that's my. We have not seen it being used. So this is only a. I think it was a university or something that's now shown that this is happened, and it's very It has similarities to Intel's Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities, which, again, both AMD and Intel had vulnerabilities to that. The intensity differences.
Yes.
Intel was probably the worst. Because again, with them, luckily, it was only on what the chip could pre-predict. So the amount of memory there it could steal from was very small. This is way worse. This is This is actually one like whoa. This is my problem is if they do the easy fix will require them to like completely redo this, and it means it will take more cycle time, which means you will lose at least, if all goes well, they maybe lose 7%. If it went like Intel, you lose 30% of your performance. If they fix it, depending on how they do, because they can also do the Intel thing where they go, you can do the fix if you want to, you'll lose 30%, or you don't do the fix and good luck.
Lose all your data.
Because I know the server guys, that's a whole story on its own for Spectre Meltdown, because that like completely, Intel also lost a lot of love there, how they handled that whole situation. But this is now, Apple needs to be really careful how they handle this one. Because this will actually show them, again, luckily they're not in Intel's position where they sell to a bunch of people on server and so forth. But if Apple wants to go into the server market, which there's a possibility of that, this type of stuff you need to be really careful with. And again, I can't expect them not to make mistakes like this. It's going to happen, especially if it's a new architecture.
Yeah.
Stuff ups are going to happen like this. It's how you respond to this. So I'm really curious to see how Apple responds to this. Are they going to lose performance? Are they going to say, oh no, you have to download the new version of the operating system? Because Apple has a very nasty tendency to do this, where they like, you have to download the latest operating system, and then the old operating system gets forgotten. And then like we have now, I tell people how ironic this is. We have more people with old Macs coming with virus issues than Windows users.
Really?
Bad. I tell people bad. I've got more people coming with Macs with viruses than Windows PCs. Like, I maybe get maybe one or two Windows PCs a month now that's infected. But it normally sucks stupid, like a browser hijacker or something like that. This is like, poor Jeremy. Like, no, your machine is so bad with Mac, it's so infected, we have to back up your data and wipe and reload. It's turfed. And this is like on high Sierra type of stuff. This is not even too old, but it is only on the old operating system. The new ones are a bit better, but we'll see. I've not had anybody coming with virus issues with the newer Macs and so forth. That will probably going to happen. Again, Mac users, the assumption is they are richer, so therefore it's easier to talk to them because they've got more money going around and so forth. But I'm actually quite shocked how badly it's getting for Mac, especially on the older Macs where there is nothing for Mac. Apple's just completely like, this is your own problem. And I must say, I'm actually amazed how infected they get. Like, oh, you now need to.
So these are on Macs that won't upgrade to the latest
versions. This is all old stuff. We're talking 2011, 2013, and so forth, backwards and so forth. So it's all the units. And
I'd probably put Linux on those machines.
Yeah, but the problem is.
For Windows.
Yeah, again, Apple doesn't make that really easy, but yeah, that's the problem is that those are clients that want Mac because they still use Mac and they're used to Mac, and now you have to buy a new Mac. I'm like, I don't have like $35,000 to spend on a new Mac. I'm like, and clearly Apple is not in for you then. Unfortunately.
They're not. We know.
That's unfortunately, Mac is a tale of two. You either can or can't.
So that's the Augury, A-U-G-U-R-Y-D, DMP vulnerability, if you want to read more about that. Fascinating. According to this article here on Tom's Hardware, Apple has not said anything.
Yeah, no, we're still waiting. Again, they still need to figure out what they're going to do, because I think there's like red lights in the room, running around. Everybody's like, it's on fire. Holy crap. This is basically what happened to Intel and AMD and ARM as well. Holy crap. Oh no. This is not good, because this is the problem is it's not an easy fix, because it's hardware. Yeah. The hardware is designed to do that. You have now somehow twisted its arm to do something mischievous that they didn't think about when they designed it. So I'm like, oof, that has to hurt. And like, it will be interesting to see if there's a nice fix that they can get, which would be nice. It would be kind of funny if it isn't, and then they're in the same position as Intel, and then you literally just, you tell Intel, oh, the vulnerabilities, because I know Apple had a big thing with, oh, vulnerabilities and blah, 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 and then you do the same thing. I'm like, oh. Good doof.
Of course, by the time this podcast comes out in about 6 weeks, there will probably be further news. In fact, this podcast is going to come out post WWDC, because the first episode of the podcast is going to be launching mid-May. So we're looking at late June for this episode to come out. So the world might have changed by then. So forgive us if we're talking about old stuff to you by the time this comes out. But such is the nature of the beast. I want to ask you one final question before we call it a wrap on this episode and on this season of Everything PC. And that's whether Apple, you think at some point in the future, is going to build its own fabrication plants. Do you think that would make sense?
Yep.
No.
TSMC, unless something really big happens or something like that. Let me put it like this. Apple's more likely to get stuff made by Intel than making their own fabs. Okay. Making your own fabs is on a whole,
not happening.
Whole new level. I feel that level of complexity is just way. If they would have done that, they would have probably bought their own like Foxconn and started making their own phones. Completely, and they won't. It's just not economically viable.
Doesn't make sense.
It's way too difficult, and the amount of money you need to spend, and I don't think, not for Apple. That's not an Apple thing.
All right. Okay. Great. Well, that's a wrap on season one of Everything PC. We hope you've enjoyed these six episodes. We've had a great deal of fun making them. We're going to take a break now and feed out the show into the market over the next 6 weeks or so, and hopefully get some feedback from you, our viewers and listeners, as to what you think, where we could improve, what you like, what you don't like, what you'd like to hear from us on season two. I'm hoping to get some guests on season two as well. So it'd be nice to have some experts, maybe from some of the vendors. Yeah. Perhaps we could get some of the technical experts on. I think we're definitely going to have to do a show on Linux in season two. I think we'll probably look at Windows and Mac OS as well. There's a lot to talk about, as you've picked up during this discussion today. But I'd love to do one specifically on Linux, because it's something I play around with. I'm no expert, but I'd love to install different distros on old laptops. In fact, my Dell XPS is currently running Ubuntu, and I do like to fiddle around. So let's do a chat about Linux and how that's come along over the years. I think that'd be fun. We haven't done any planning for season two yet. So let us know what you think we should be doing. We're probably going to sit down recording after this current season has fully aired out. So we're probably looking at around mid to late winter to get season two on the boil. But we'd love to hear from you. I still haven't created that email address, but it will be ready for season two. In the interim, Gerard is on Gerard P. That's GERHARDP for Pretorius, obviously, at computersonly.co.za. Computersonly.co.za. It's the company he works for, and he builds great PCs. If you want to get hold of him, I'm sure he'd be very happy to chat to you about building a 200,000 Rand monster, gaming monster. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure those are the best builds to do.
Oh, right, yes. You know? No, they always bring a couple of quarter cards and a Threadripper. They're always pretty beautiful.
And mail me as well, duncan@techcentral.co.za. We'd love to get your feedback on the show. We are looking for a sponsor for season two as well. So if you work for one of the vendors in the industry and you think this would be a good match for you, do reach out to us. You can drop me a line, And I'll put you in contact with our advertising sales team, who will put together a package. We have some ideas about how we could work with sponsors. So do get in touch. I think this is a niche, but very dedicated audience that we're appealing to here with this show. And they do spend the money on, as we know, on high-end hardware. So good opportunity for a vendor to come in and partner with us going forward from season two. So we look forward to that. Do mail us if you're keen. And I think, Gerard, that unless you have anything else, I think we're going to call it quits on season one. We've got about 10 hours of content there. Hope you've enjoyed it. And until we meet again in a few months, take care. And, of course, happy computing.